Recordings have started. You may begin.
Thank you. This is the 22nd meeting of the CWG Stewardship. Today is the 19th of February, and it's 11 UTC. I'll turn it over to the chairs.
Thank you, Grace, and welcome everyone to this meeting, 22nd meeting. Wow. Feels like we should have done our job by now. So welcome to the first meeting post-Singapore. I suspect for some, including myself, a breather might have been desirable, a break this week. Some of us worked on the weekend or traveled back over the weekend, so there's only been a few short days to get reoriented and prepared for this meeting. But on balance, we decided to move ahead. So I hope we can have a productive session. We've done some preparation work yesterday and in the run-up to the meeting. So I hope that puts us in a position to do what we can now. We will do what we can and aim to have a productive session and keep the ball rolling, as it were. Obviously, we had ICANN 52 in the full glare of the ICANN community and arguably the broader community with an interest in this. And as I think I said in Singapore, this to me, and discussed this with Lisa and others, felt like a bit of a watershed. We're certainly aware and that there are two proposals that have been submitted to the ICG, and to some at least, we appeared to be struggling to make progress. So there's definitely, in my mind and in Lisa's mind, having discussed it with her, a need to make and be seen to make demonstrable progress towards a comprehensive and complete proposal. That's not to say we won't do it with thoroughness and care, but nevertheless, we need to sort of focus on what the endpoint's going to look like insofar as that's possible. We obviously had many sessions, including a meeting of the CWG, our group, on Wednesday. I know for some of you that sort of felt dominated by the front desk a little and sort of very process-oriented. I think it felt to us that to some extent that was necessary, probably for two reasons. One, because of a need to rethink the processes and the mechanics of how we work. And two, because to some extent, although it was cast as a meeting of the CWG, it was very obviously a public and highly visible meeting. So it necessitated doing things a little differently. I know when we went then into the Thursday meeting with the Q&A, we got encouraging feedback from you and from others in the community about the substance we went into. And so that's something we'll pick up on to the extent that we can in 2A on the agenda next. But it's just a reminder that overall we did commit to a sort of refreshed and refocused approach. We're not going to do an about turn, but we are going to need to, as I said, continue to make progress and be seen to be making progress and work towards a functional, implementable, and complete plan and give the sense and the immediate sense, really, of the emergence of that kind of plan. So one of the key things we'll focus on is ensuring that any part of the plan that we work on has the functional requirements defined up front. So we're very clear what we're working on by defining it, by defining the area we're working on, the requirements of that component, and then work towards the solutions. And obviously we'll pick up on that a little more in item four, which is another sort of process-oriented point. I think just prior to the recording starting, Avery asked about the RFP groups, and I know when you made reference to the, I think it's the NCSG proposal, or in any event, the proposal that you've been working on, Avery, there was a reference to RFP3. I think we are likely to try and work in a different way where we don't necessarily run RFP3 meetings as such, but focus more on the smaller groups, the task forces that focus on smaller chunks of work that then feed back into the sort of committee of the whole. In any event, I think everyone is likely to be involved in at least two meetings per week. And in a sense, I'm not saying there's going to be Big Brother watching you, but you should measure your own active participation by probably participating in at least two meetings a week if you are able to. That's the full meeting of the CWG every Thursday at the alternating times that we've been running it at. And in addition to that, one or more contributing to one or more task force meetings. And I think that's the way we're likely to work going forward. So while we that deals with item one, really. Okay, thanks, Avery, for clarifying that's not an NCSG proposal as such, but rather three of you who happen to be NCSG members. Let me just pause for a moment if there are any other additional questions or comments before we go on to item two. And I will note that I didn't ask for a formal roll call, but I'm assuming we're working to the process we have previously, which is we will record everyone in the Adobe Connect room as present at the meeting, and those that are not able to be in the Adobe Connect room but are on the audio should please make themselves be known now. So I'll pause for anyone to make themselves known if they are not in the Adobe Connect room now.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Chuck Gomes. I'm not an Adobe Connect, and I'll be in and out a little bit on audio because I'm heading to the airport.
Thanks, Chuck. All right, so we assume we have present, or we work on the fact that we have present everyone who is currently in the Adobe Connect room, and in addition, Chuck, who's joined us, Chuck Gomes, who's joined us over the telephone. So let's move then on to item two, which is the mechanics and approach to processing outputs from ICANN 52. Now, I mean, there have been various comments around the intensity, diversity, and the type of sessions that took place. I made a couple of remarks on that in the opening remarks as well, relating to the Wednesday and Thursday sessions. But clearly there was a session hosted by the ICG. There were various other sessions. Both Lisa and myself were present and or participating in each of the CCWG meetings. And so what we've done is taken a twofold approach to this, in the first instance at least, and it'll be helpful to have any comment or input you might like to provide on that. With respect to the sessions as a whole, Grace has gone through all of the transcripts and essentially pulled out the transcripts and, to the extent that it appears relevant, any responses that were made to questions or comments, and put those through in a form of sequence of the different sessions. And so at present, that forms a large document that is essentially a reference point. Now, talking with Lisa a little bit before the meeting, we felt that at minimum this would be useful as a reference point going forward for any work on the principal proposal or indeed any contributing work that the task forces undertake to be able to cross-reference and for the group as a whole to be able to cross-reference this. I think it's hyperlinked, Grace, from the table of contents, so you can go through to the different points in the document. So a couple of thanks to Grace in the chat, but let me see if there are any other comments, if anyone else would like to put up a hand, comment, or question this. But it's certainly an attempt to produce an integrated, summary is not the right word, but an integrated document that covers the sessions pertinent to the work of this group, where the work of this group was the primary topic or a component of the work, including, for example, the first one, which is the GAC session on Sunday, 8th of February. All right, I'm not seeing any hands or questions now. I'll obviously encourage you to look at this. If you have any suggestions as to how this could be better developed, or but in any event, I hope it'll provide a useful reference point. Now, Barry Cobb from staff, who's also one of the staff members working with us on the group, has taken this a step further and worked on the Q&A work. Now, just a quick reminder there, what we did was we, instead of producing a revised proposal, as you know, we produced a discussion document, a document that really described the work of the CWG to date and some of the key issues and challenges we had faced, and in particular segmented out the models associated with potential separation of the IANA function from ICANN, and then sought to ask a series of 9 questions. We dealt with those 2 ways. We asked people whenever we could to be looking at those questions and thinking about those questions in their groups and to provide responses. We made it clear, I hope, that those responses were not to be in the form of highly tied down and specific statements, but rather more general responses to the questions as they were asked. And then we dealt with those questions systematically in our session on Thursday, and we made progress to around question 4 or 5 from memory. So that's what we did, and then we made it clear that we would remain open to written responses to those questions, and I'll highlight that with the group now, that we do remain open. There was some ambiguity whether it was until today or tomorrow, but in essence, a week from the session we held on Thursday the 12th. So up to today or tomorrow, it's not desperately, if something creeps in tomorrow, we're hardly going to say it's not relevant, but we do want to draw a line under it. So we'll say no later than, let's say, approximately close of business UTC on Friday, so 1800 UTC Friday, the 20th, we'll draw a line under responses. As it happens, we're not receiving any written responses either through members and participants to the list, or to the extent that people don't have access, people or groups don't have access to members participants. We haven't received anything, but we are receptive to receiving input via Grace, whose email is has been publicized for that purpose. What Barry's done, Barry, let me hand over to you and let you just say a word. Personally, I found this a useful format, at least to review the input. So let me hand over to you and just to describe what you've done and see if there are any comments or questions relating to that.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Barry Cobb for the record. So as Jonathan mentioned, basically what I've taken is the extrapolation that Grace had taken from the transcripts of the Thursday morning session and imported them into, everybody knows I love spreadsheets, so I imported it into a table form delineated by the question type and then, of course, segmented by the particular individual or person that was making a particular comment or responding to the question in our forum. And what I tried to do is to flush out responses or categorize, for lack of a better word, the responses to those questions. So, for example, the first one, is almost pretty much a simple yes-no kind of response. Do you believe that the transition from the NTIA should happen, and please provide a reason? So where those persons that seem to support that the transition would go, I would flag it over to the right as a yes, or if there was opposition or disagreement that the transition should happen, I would flag it as a no. And then in simple terms, some of the responses, it wasn't exactly clear whether it was a true yes or no. And I tried to remain objective, knowing who participates on the group and their positions, I could have tried to say, well, yes, I know that Milton Mueller, for example, does support the transition, and you know, I could easily select one or not. So I try to remain objective, but that isn't perfect. Where it becomes a little bit more detailed is starting with the second question, which is dives a little bit deeper into the substance of where the proposal may go. And from there were more attributes that started to emerge from the responses, such as if there was support for internal accountability versus external oversight, or if somebody had mentioned that some form of agreement needed to occur, then I would try to flag that here. So I'll just conclude that we've only done two questions so far, but if the group finds this useful, we'll go ahead and continue to move forward with the remaining seven questions. And lastly, I'll state, while we're the flagging of these attributes is really just for a quicker read of the responses. None of this will be tabulated in any way to try to show that there's weight towards one position or another. It's really just kind of a quicker way to highlight some of the responses and some of the key attributes to that response. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you all, Jonathan, and thank you.
Thanks, Barry. There's a couple of points coming up in the chat about A, reminding on written responses, B, questioning whether written responses will be added to this, and C, whether we'd consider an extension. My thoughts are, yes, written responses should be added to two, yes, we should send reminders out, and I would like to ask that members take this on board themselves and communicate back to their groups to remind them that they can utilize members for this purpose and should submit written responses as soon as possible. As to extending the deadline, I think it would be very useful to try and deal with this at least in part, although this will form a reference point. I'm not 100% sure how we will deal with this. I think it would be useful to deal with this as part of our ongoing work, and I'm ever mindful of this balance between making sure we include as much input as possible, yet continue to move forward. My temptation is to perhaps stretch the deadline out to Monday, so something like 1800 UTC Monday, which will give at least two or possibly even three more business days to provide responses. Whilst additional responses are important, at this point we aren't strongly quantifying the output of this. This will be a reference point to guide the writing of the document. So that feels like it will accommodate the requirements, but let me pause now to respond to the hands that have gone up. First from Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Jonathan. Martin Boyle here. I was under the impression that you were looking for inputs to the questionnaire from members and participants, and that seemed to be what you were saying when you referred to working back through the various organizations, like, for example, the CCNSO. Are you actually shutting it off to individual organizations putting input in?
Martin, my understanding, and I thought we had communicated this, was that we would take input from members and participants or through members and participants. Ideally, that input was representative as possible of the organizations they represent, but acknowledging that that wasn't always possible, I think we were seeking for any member or participant that made that contribution to qualify whether or not that was simply their own opinion or representative of the group they were a representative of. I hope that's clear.
Thanks. That's very helpful, Jonathan.
Martin, Alan.
Thank you very much. I'm sensing something here that I didn't have going into this meeting, and that is you're explicitly looking for input from the organizations that are present around this table. And that implicitly means that if we don't submit something, you know, our views are perhaps going to be somewhat discounted. Certainly from an ALAC point of view, we had not planned to go through this and give you formal answers to the questions. But if that means, you know, that we have effectively less input into the process if we're not represented in this chart, then that, of course, has to change. So that's different from what I thought. This was a document largely for the rest of the community to provide their input to augment what we're doing. So I would appreciate some clarity there.
Alan, I'll let others offer their clarity as well, but my understanding was that we made it available to the broader community, which includes ESSO, ICANN, ESSO, and ACs, members, participants, and frankly, anyone else who was participating in ICANN 52 for us to get as broad a possible set of inputs. We weren't looking specifically for position statements from the different groups, formalized position statements, but rather diversity of inputs to guide the work of the group.
I'm not, forgive me for coming back, I'm not 100% sure what that means. Assuming the people on this group are representing, in our case, at large and ALAC, does that mean you need the additional comment in writing formally answering these questions or not? Or
Alan, my personal view is no, that to the extent that you are confident of the views, but to some, we just gave cover to those that felt they were unable to solicit and or represent the views of their groups, to say that this is my personal opinion,
okay.
To not shut them off from providing that input either. So it's almost the opposite way around. I think that's the way I understood it, at least.
And that's the way I understood it going into it also. I've just gotten a little bit anyway, okay, we're talking on the same wavelength, so that's fine.
Thanks, Alan. Any other comments or questions? And clearly these can come out in the interim as well. This doesn't include a summary of all of the questions. It's a start and a proposed format with which to record the input that we receive. Okay, well, we will continue to take input up until Monday next week. We will process all input, that, in other words, that received the Thursday session and any other written input received. I am not sure that we will be able to quantify it more than that has been done on the table, but if anyone has any smart ideas as to how better or otherwise to deal with this data, by all means provide that. But in the meantime, it's a reference point for all of us, should we be either preparing documents or cross-referencing our principal document or contributions to our principal document against this, to see whether it passes, for want of a better expression, a sort of smell test against the opinions expressed through this process. Okay, let's move us along then to item three, which is an update on the work of the client committee and the seeking of legal advice. I think I'll hand that over to Greg Chatan. Greg, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. Greg Chatan, for the record. In terms of the client committee, looks like we're trying to schedule another meeting of the client committee for tomorrow. We still have the same, fairly much the same short list that we had before. We have in the total of 6 firms on the list, although one may drop off due to conflict. They represent an active IRP complainant, if you will, and therefore they're adverse to ICANN in that sense. What we need to do is schedule calls between the client committee and the kind of finalist firm. And I think we'll talk about how to do that on our client committee call tomorrow. We're still awaiting from a couple of the firms their kind of capabilities documents. We did receive a couple while we were in Singapore. So we want to have essentially the same type of information from all the firms in that regard before we not before we talk to them, but kind of as we make our judgment. And I think the intent is really to make I'm not sure why I'm muffled. I'm talking on my cell phone. But, the intent is to I think make next week a very busy week in terms of the client committee and closing in on a firm and dealing with details of the engagement. We'll need to sign an engagement letter, which is basically a contract, to give the legal services. We'll need to figure out, how to manage the relationship between this committee and the CCWG's client committee, and also ICANN, who have been participating in the law firm kind of selection and discovery process. I've also been participating in the CCWG's legal committee, and we had a meeting while we were in Singapore and moved forward on the same thing. So we're really looking at this point at the same list of firms. So while we might not kind of merge the two committees, I think there'll be a heightened amount of coordination between the legal and client committees of the two groups, so that we can likely make a joint decision. Clearly, if our needs seem to diverge from theirs, to an extent that a single law firm wouldn't be the right choice for both, then we will we will deal with that. But basically, the firms we're looking at, I think it's highly unlikely that would be the case. All the firms are large U.S. firms with significant presences in California. Some are California-based, some are based elsewhere, but all have strong California bases, strong corporate governance, and deep familiarity with California law, including nonprofit law. I would expect it probably 95% chance that we would select the same firm as the CCWG, and I still think we will be on our schedule to engage a law firm by the end of the month. If that goes off, it'll go off only by days, and not by anything longer than that. We'll certainly have them in discussion and singled out before that time. I think that's it. And if there are any questions, happy to take them.
Thanks, Greg. I'll keep an eye on the Adobe. I noticed Andrew Sullivan's point of view in the chat that, from his perspective, a single law firm is essentially a hard requirement of the process, in that almost like a necessary condition in order to be able to deliver things on time. Personally, I'm very sympathetic to the use of a single law firm. I think it, just from a kind of
That's absolutely the direction that we are going in, and I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the result. The only reason for the result is if somehow, in looking at our work methods or issues, somehow we diverge from our original plan so markedly that a different kind of advice is needed. But frankly, I don't see that happening. And the more that I spent time talking to Leon Sanchez, who is leading the client or the legal committee on that end, and other members of their committee, the more it became apparent to me that our needs are aligned. I see another question in the chat from Sean. Greg, you mentioned six have been shortlisted and more may drop based on conflict. If I may ask, what factor determines conflict in this context? Conflict of interest rules are ethical rules that are standard pretty much under U.S. law firm ethics rules. They're not laws, but they are rules that are adopted on a state-by-state basis. Basically, it would be if a law firm that we were talking with was already directly adverse to ICANN in a litigation or litigation-type environment. If a law firm had represented a counterparty to ICANN in a transaction, or is currently representing it, rather, then that typically is waivable conflict or not a conflict at all. It's not a case that anybody who's ever dealt with ICANN or been adverse to ICANN or represented ICANN is conflicted out. It's an analysis that takes place on the basis of the facts and circumstances in each case. And the nuances could take the rest of this call. And indeed, most law firms have a specialist lawyer who spends all their time determining whether conflicts exist in particular client arrangements, and then resolving those conflicts if they're waivable. And I'd say probably in half the cases where lawyers think there's a conflict, the specialist tells them that they're actually wrong. Lawyers tend to over-identify conflict. I see Mark Sarvel thinks this is moving forward painfully slowly. Oh, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I do think that, being in Singapore, weren't able to keep up necessarily the pace to the same extent, especially given time differences. But as I said, I think that we are having a meeting of the client committee tomorrow, and I expect that we will try, especially toward the early part of next week, to schedule calls with the finalists. With an eye toward having I'd say at least a tentative recommendation for next week's call, this time next week. That would be my goal, and I think that's a doable goal and keeps us on track for our end of month engagement.
Thank you, Greg. And then in addition, and in part response to Mark Bovell's comment, the objective of the work method is, and we'll come to this in a moment, is specifically that we don't get slowed down by something like the legal advice becoming a rate limiting factor. So we recognize its importance, but remove it from the critical path not in the final event, but at least in the short term, put us in a parallel path.
I see Eduardo asking, are we going to have some... Yeah. Sorry, Jonathan, go ahead.
You go ahead, Greg, it's fine.
Okay, Eduardo Diaz asks, are we going to have some legal advice before the proposed face-to-face in March? I think that if we have, as I expect, counsel engaged around the end of February, and we have basically 3 weeks between then and March, that we absolutely will have advice by then, whether we have a full written formal deliverable, which is, as I've said before, not the, it may be the ultimate end of this exercise, but it's not the the primary end of this exercise. I think that we will have a significant amount of advice on the issues before us, before the face-to-face, and I would hope far enough in advance of the face-to-face to have been able to consider that legal advice in advance of the face-to-face, and at least in one meeting, either a regularly scheduled meeting or another meeting of this group. So I think that's the idea, is that we would have, you know, a good 3 weeks with counsel, and we would be able to have the necessary dialogue with them, bring stuff back to this group, maybe even as soon as the first meeting of March, but certainly by the second meeting of March, so that we have, you know, the kind of course setting and advice on what we're looking at versus what they might recommend, and advice on how to improve some of the things we're looking at, or how to choose amongst them, or perhaps discard certain ones. That would be the kind of the result of a good back and forth with the lawyers. You know, how exactly we will work with the lawyers, you know, with the client committee versus this committee of the whole, versus some intermediate subgroup, is something to explore. We can't necessarily have the lawyers available to every member of this group on an equal basis, or else we would run up a very high legal bill very fast, and while there's no formal cap on the amount, I think that would be not cost-effective. Nonetheless, we need to make sure that the legal advice is transparent, and that issues that are on people's minds as being important gating issues are fully answered, so that we can move on. As noted in the chat, these are, you know, dependencies. The legal advice is a critical dependency, and therefore a high priority. So I will keep people advised on the list as to the progress that we make tomorrow and over the course of the following week, so that you can kind of, you know, watch things unfold in more or less real time. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again, Greg, and thanks for the comments and questions relating to that item. And I know Mark Covell's effectively closing comment there, that the ability to make recommendations within administrations will depend on, at least in part, although he says just depend on the position afforded by the legal opinion. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everyone else.
Jonathan, if I could just respond briefly to that. Legal opinion is a term that of art, in a sense, in the law, which usually means a formal, written, capital O, opinion of a law firm, or less informally, or less formally, a full, definitive kind of written memorandum, on everything that goes on. Initially, the advice that we're getting going to get is more on the kind of oral and email level. It may be more telegraphic, or at least not the precision and kind of heft. If people are looking for a full written document to take back to their groups, that is not necessarily going to happen so quickly. Those type of things tend to take a while to write. The primary purpose in my mind is to get the kind of transactional advice that lawyers give their clients while they're trying to make a project move forward. In the end, I expect we will have a formal deliverable in the form of a definitive memorandum, but if that is a gating factor in and of itself, which I don't think it should be, that is not going to come. Is unlikely to come, I would say, before the face-to-face, because I think there's going to be the back and forth and kind of counseling that we need is really what has to take precedence during that period. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Olivier, your hand is up.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Olivier Catanablon speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. With this legal advice that's unlikely to reach us within the next month or so, and with the importance of this legal advice being recognized by many, including members in our community and at large, I am getting a sense that our hands are somehow tied until that legal advice comes in. Could you... or anyone on the call, explain how we were able to move forward in the meantime and not be tied to this, because I'm really concerned as far as timing is concerned. And this is a worry because it seems to be delaying us in proceeding and having a good proposal that's on the table. So I'd appreciate some clarification on this. Thank you.
Olivier, I would like you to ask you to hold that question. Greg, if you want to make a brief response, but ideally I'd like to hold that question until later once we've dealt with the next couple of sections which deal with interim work and how we will work, what we can reasonably hope to achieve, and then if the answer is at that point not clear, to revisit that question.
If I could just briefly state that, you know, kind of reiterating what I said before, we'll start getting legal advice from the law firm as soon as they're engaged. That advice is not going to take the form of definitive, lengthy legal opinions, but rather the form of kind of, you know, back and forth, which we'll try to document in, you know, emails or you know, brief memoranda, in very informal memoranda. But it's not that we're going to have to wait for some long memo to get, quote-unquote, the legal advice. That may be ex post facto some summary of the legal advice we get, but the legal advice we're going to get is constant. Basically, you know, lawyers perform kind of as coaches in this. So to say that the legal advice only comes when the game is over would be incorrect. The legal advice will come while we're working.
Thanks, Greg. I'm going to move us on to the next item, and then, Olivia, I will encourage you to come back if a combination of Greg's answer and or the other items we deal with in 4, 5, and 6 don't help with a vision and a view of where we go moving forward. So, as you know, in Singapore, we talked about work methods, and I mentioned that again at the start of this call. So what we've asked Bernie Turcotte, who is helping us from staff support, to do is to try and capture those work methods in the form of some draft documents, which we will share with you immediately after the call. And in the meantime, I'll ask Bernie to work through those and describe to you. There's really three documents. One describes the proposed working method. Two describes the function of task forces in that method. And three is an initial indicative format for the creation of those task forces. So let me hand over to Bernie for item 4, and he can talk you through the concept and detail on those three documents.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think it'll take a second to get the documents up, and then we'll get going. I think as you noted, we will be proposing something to keep us working productively while we do wait for the legal advice. Grace, do you get a hold of the documents? I guess the first one will be the working method one. We've got four documents there. I see Grace is working furiously at getting this up on our screen. So basically, the concept, I'll lead off a bit from my own version here. Hold on a sec. Proposing to modify the work methods. Is to develop the next version of the CWG transition proposal on a continuous basis. Do not wait to have all answers before putting pen to paper. And it's an evolving proposal document that will be available to all. We want to break up the work into manageable pieces so that a small group of participants, which we'll call a task force, can take on that specific piece to deliver the proposal text for the transition proposal, which will be reviewed by the CWG. We're going to focus on elements for which we have agreement, or that should be common to all models, internal or external, such as SLAs. We want to use a continuous process to review active task forces weekly, to assess progress, issues, and deliverables. Sections of RFP 1 and 2 of the original CWG draft proposal of 1 December are complete but contain significantly more information when compared to the protocols and address proposals submitted to the ICG. Therefore, an editorial objective will be to streamline our proposal so that it's similar to the other two, more accessible to the average reader, and simpler to compare for the ICG, given that we're extending the time. Anything that's going to make this simpler to process for the general public, and especially the ICG, I'm certain will be welcome. I'll continue to hold the pen for the proposal and would distribute a current version of the document for our weekly calls. So basically the idea, as you can see here, is really not to wait, but to get going and keep developing the proposal as we go and not wait to have all the answers canned before we put pen to paper. The task force is a small group of qualified people focused on a highly specific issue with a clear deliverable identified at the formation and with a time-limited schedule that is part of the critical path. We're talking about task forces that have direct responsibilities for producing a segment of the transition proposal we are to prepare. A task force should deliver work in a short period, 2 weeks or less, according to the mandate, and will be dissolved after delivery of work product. Failure to deliver will affect the overall project schedule. Meetings of the full CWG or the CWG mailing list will review the current state of the overall draft proposal, identify the need for new task forces, review progress of ongoing task forces, and review output of any task forces that have completed their work. Task forces that complete their work will be disbanded and new ones will be created to address new issues and points of convergence as we continue to develop the proposal. Summary work processes will be written, and outcomes of the task force will need to be agreed by the CWG. So that's the general lay of the land that we're proposing for moving forward. And I guess we can take questions on this part if there are any. There are a couple of more parts that follow this one. We'll describe the guidelines for task forces in more details on the next one. I'll hand it over to Jonathan now.
Thanks, Bernie. Please, could you leave that up on the screen? We haven't taken any questions or comments. So I'll make two comments on that. One, that the objective clearly states that the idea is to make progress on the transition proposal in brackets while waiting for legal advice. So that's the key objective, is to continue to make definable and measure progress. Second, we highlight in the component under task force that it should be a small group of qualified people, and I would think a reasonable question is what determines a qualified person. I think in my mind, there's two criteria that determine someone who's qualified, ideally with someone with relevant expertise. So if you're going to be working on SLAs, which is our working example, ideally you have been the customer or supplier of an SLA-based piece of work before, and have clear experience of either executing according to an SLA contract or receiving services based on that. So that would be one example. Second point on qualified is that you have the time to commit in short order to be able to contribute to that specific subject. So those are a couple of points. Any other questions or comments relating to this? Stephanie, go ahead. I'm pressing the wrong button here. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Stephanie Duchino for the transcript. One of the things, and we've been talking about this a little bit on the registry side, is that for the development of SLAs, it may be better to have some of our people on the operational side than on the policy side working on this. I don't know if there is any flexibility. I know the plan is to have these limited strictly to existing participants of the working group, but to extend it so that people who have actually been working and are very familiar with the IANA SLAs could participate in the shorter body of work, but who might not have interest or bandwidth to contribute to being a participant in the full CWG. I don't know if there's the possibility of any flexibility around that.
Thanks, Stephanie. I'll throw this open to responses, but my personal view is that there's really two ways we can deal with this. We either accept that task forces, perhaps we could say something like it needs to be led by a member or a participant, but is potentially open to non-members or participants to contribute, if they are qualified by demonstrable relevant expertise. That may be one basis we could do it. An alternative is to, and this seems perhaps unnecessarily bureaucratic, is to require anyone who wants to participate in a task force to join the group as a participant, understanding that they may not be able to contribute in full as a participant, but have a specific role. So those seem like two practical points. I mean, I see Yark puts in the chat that task forces can always consult with experts. I guess that's a reasonable point, Yarp. The only issue here is we were hoping to define the task forces by list of participants, really with two objectives in mind. One, to make sure it was transparent who was actually contributing, and two, to sort of manage the numbers a little bit such that they didn't get unwieldy in terms of overly large, and also that there was potential for members or participants to contribute to multiple task forces. So, Greg, I'm going to come back to you, assuming you aren't dealing with this specific point, and go to Alan, assuming he is responding to this.
I'm no longer sure what this is.
The point being the question on whether or not, Stephanie's question that she asked about whether or not it was acceptable for task forces to contain members or contributors other than members or participants.
So my question is not related to that. John, my question is not related to that. It's a separate one.
thanks, Alan. I heard you. I'm just checking if there's anything else on this topic. Thank you. We'll come back to you then in a moment. Okay, I will propose that we do allow non-members to participate in task forces. Perhaps we might say subject to them not being in the majority. So as a minority contribution in numbers. And if anyone wants to pick this up in any further detail on list, that's what I suggest we do. It's a practical opportunity for experts to contribute, but not necessarily dominate or hijack a task force. Greg, you're next in the queue.
Thanks. Jonathan, Greg Shatton, for the record. My comment is kind of, you know, more broadly kind of a thought on the work method and the task forces. I think clearly getting task forces to deal with discrete issues is important, critical, but I think it's also critical that we don't lose the forest for the trees. I think that two kind of overarching thoughts. One, I don't think that meetings of the whole group only once a week between now and the face-to-face will be sufficient. I think that when we were under the previous methodology, we were effectively having meetings, you know, between this and the and the RFP groups at least kind of three times a week, and managing, you know, to cover a lot of substance in those calls. I'm sure that our future calls of the group as a whole will be more substance oriented. Obviously, this is a course resetting discussion here. And I think that, you know, whether we call it RFP3 or another meeting of the whole, I think we need to have a meeting between now and next week's meeting to discuss issues of structure. I think that there have been a lot of discussions about structure and trying to work the different documents or possibly hybridize these models. While I think that you know, there is the need for legal advice before that discussion can go too much further, there's a lot of kind of bottled up thoughts and discussions on this, not just the model that that Avery and others have been worked for, but others. So I think that devoting our next call to that, our next Thursday's call to that, would probably not work. I think that we should try to put something together before that. I also think between now and the end of and March, in order for us to march forward, we'll need to work on more than a once weekly basis. If we get work back from the task forces, which are intended to, you know, not to finish projects, but to bring them to the full group for further discussion and finishing, 2 hours a week is not going to be enough. So I think that's, and my last point, which is kind of unrelated, but it also goes to both the issues of these task forces and our task, is that it's clear that what we need to deliver is a turnkey proposal. And by that I mean it needs to include all of the elements in a way that they can be implemented literally the day that the IANA Functions contract expires or is terminated. So the SLAs and escalation documents and any other documents that are agreements or documentation of how things work need to be done. If there are groups such as the CSC that exist, they're going to need to be chartered. So charters will be done, need to be done. So I know that in the GNSO we often tend to think about policy and then leave implementation to staff with our guidance, but we have to do policy and implementation in this group. So I think I just, you know, kind of want to bring that up. Thanks.
So two good points, Greg. One, a proposal to have more than one meeting per week. Two, to focus on implementation in addition to the sort of policy components of this, if you want to call it that.
And also not to lose the big picture.
Sorry, Greg, could you repeat that?
Yes, I said also, you know, the thrust of my first comment was not to lose the big picture, not to lose the forest for the trees. And I think we need to, not just discuss these issues about structures on the list, but, you know, make them the subject of a meeting, whatever, you know, we call that meeting.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I was wondering, as you were saying that, whether we made one meeting on substance and one on a specific, well, not on substance, but on a specific core topic, you know, focused in and around a core topic, one or more core topics. But I think maybe we'll tie ourselves up if we do that unnecessarily. I think we can flex that as we need to. So the question is, is there a willingness, and could you remind me when the RFP 3 meeting was conducted?
Typically, we conducted them Monday and Friday at 1400 UTC.
So if this was a meeting of the group, we would need to at least consider alternating the various meetings. Let's take that as a proposal. I mean, in one way, it would be good to poll the group. I mean, it feels to me like that's a pretty strong motivation. I wonder if we could poll the group on a willingness to meet twice a week. Staff, is it possible to run a poll quickly now?
Sure, Jonathan. This is Grace. I can prep that for you. Give me a few minutes.
All right, let's go to Alan while we prep that poll. Alan, you're next in the queue. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. The word qualified has me a little bit perturbed. Clearly, we don't want unqualified people. But many of us in this group are, I would put in the category of generalists and not necessarily qualified. Qualified in some sense either means you need to be a technologist who's doing this for a living, whatever the particular aspect of the task is, or very often from the way we're looking at things, a lawyer. And I'm not quite sure how we're defining qualified in this case.
Alan, could you play back to me what you heard when I defined qualified, and then we'll see if we are in agreement on that.
No, I can't play it back. we were talking about qualified, then we were talking about bringing in subject matter experts, and I guess I have some fuzzy level of what you are qualified at for a particular task if you're not the subject matter expert.
All right, so that's a good point. I think there were two questions. One, I made some opening remarks about what defined qualified. Two, we had a specific question as to whether subject matter experts who were not members or participants could participate in task forces and in so doing contribute. I think we agreed that was the case, and I suggested and got no opposition to having subject matter experts participate in task forces who were not necessarily members or participants of the CWG, subject to them, the collective grouping of those subject matter experts not being in the majority on any given task force. So that dealt with the subject matter experts. Separately dealing with qualified, I realize we're in slightly potentially uncomfortable territory, so acknowledge your point here. The way I attempted to define it was twofold. One, that in order to be qualified, you had some form of demonstrable expertise to the particular subject of the task force. Now, quite how you measure that, I realize we could spend the rest of the call on. So it's going to have to be a subjective test or a test that the participants ask themselves, am I suitably qualified to contribute, or could someone else who's volunteering contribute better? So there's one issue is that form of qualification, expertise, if you like. And the second was, a second qualification I referred to was that you had enough time to contribute in short order, in other words, over the next week or two, to the work of that task force. So, and then I made the example of someone who had direct experience of either supplying a product that or service subject to an SLA or being the purchaser of a product or service subject to an SLA.
If I may have a follow-up. Yes, I caught all of that. It's the, SLAs are easy because we have SLAs in all sorts of businesses, and most of us have experienced something related to SLAs. I don't have a list of what the other known tasks are at this point, so it's a bit harder for me to give the counter-argument. Let's just leave it at the fact that I have a little bit of unease that many of us on this group may be excluded because we are not qualified in the particular subject that the task may be about. As you know, that we're not unqualified, but we may not have particular credentials.
Accepted and acknowledged, Alan, and it's not meant to be exclusive, but it's meant to recognize that there's going to be multiple parallel tasks going on, and ideally participants in the task force should put themselves through that, their own scrutiny, to say, am I best qualified, and where can I best contribute in these areas of specific expertise.
Okay, thank you.
So, thanks, Alan. Let's make let's take the poll now. And I don't see Donna's comment, but I saw a reference to it, and I imagine that's sensitivity on time zones. And Donna, I do scroll up and see that now. And, of course, that's relevant because it depends on where they are, and that's a natural challenge we face. So, well, I think it's subject to that point. It's pretty evident that we see somewhere in the upper 80s percent-wise of tolerance of respondents so far to meeting twice a week, and around, so it's looking kind of 90-10 in very rough terms for support of more than one meeting per week. So there's a fine line here between some sort of revolving and making it practical. We have been running at 11 and 2 UTC, but both of those are pretty early out on the West Coast, and we may want to, we've really got to stretch between, this can go on, this is another big issue, how you handle the relationship between sort of, in very broad terms, Asia, Europe, and West Coast of USA, and how you find a simple formula to accommodate all. But certainly we're seeing a support for that, and subject to comments that they shouldn't all fall during night hours. So all right, let's close the poll. We've had 24 respondents to that, and it gives us a pretty good idea that there's somewhere north of 80 and somewhere south of 20 in terms of in favor, 80 plus in favor and 20 minus not in favor. We'll give some thought to the timing and try and propose some reasonable rotation that accommodates, that looks at, and I've done this before, where you look at the, at minimum, the members, and try and make sure that one accommodates the members. This is difficult. We have members and participants all over the world, so we'll have to look at some form of rotation or shifting of times of the calls to accommodate everyone. Okay, we've been a little stuck on point one. Let's move, Bernie, from point one to point two, which provides us with a little more detail on the task forces. And then, if you could remove the poll from the display.
so we'll wait for the guidelines document to come up. I think that given our discussion of the last 15 or so minutes, there should be very few surprises here. A CWG task force, a lightweight structure intended to be a small group of qualified people who will work on a highly specific issue with a clear deliverable identified at the onset and with a time-limited schedule that is part of the critical path. So essentially what we said previously. Outcomes, task forces aim to deliver work in a short period, 2 weeks or less, according to a set mandate. Dissolved after delivery of work product, failure to deliver will affect the delivery of the project. Results of a task force need to be approved by the CWG participants prior to integration into the evolving CWG proposal. Working method, define the issue, relevant, clear, specific, and critical to the success of the overall project. All should be able to be communicated in less than one page in the request for a CWG task force. Definitions should also clearly describe the deliverable work product. Approval for creation. Chairs to review the creation of all task forces and participants with CWG. Once agreed, the task force will be assigned a unique task force number. A register of task forces and related issues will be kept by support staff and publicly available. Participants, unless there are clear requirements to the contrary, task force should not include more than 7 participants and should be typically around 5. Proposal for a CWG task force must include lead participant responsible for delivering the work product to the CWG, must include a list of potential participants as well as their statements of interest, and qualification for the task force. We're just talking about one paragraph here. Greg, I see your hand. I'll just finish this because it's almost done, and I'll get back to you, or Jonathan will. There will be limited support for task forces unless otherwise arranged. Teleconferences and Adobe Room will be scheduled with staff if necessary and available. It is expected that most of the work can be carried out via email and online document editing. Staff may be able to offer writing and research support, but would not usually take action items, produce any kind of minutes or task of the task force meeting. If task force encounters an issue which will make it impossible to work to the agreed time, this must be communicated to the co-chairs promptly. Issues will be logged in the CWG task force list. So this is just, if you will, detailing what was presented in the previous document in a little bit more detail. I don't think there's anything strikingly new here. And I guess I'll hand it back to Jonathan to take the questions.
Thanks, Bernie. And obviously we'll take more questions and comments on list. But Greg, you had your hand up, so let's hear from you.
Thanks. Just a clarification on one point. In the end of outcome, it says results of a task force need to be approved by the CWG participants. That's a little bit different than I had kind of thought our working method would be. Rather, I thought these were being brought back for discussion, not merely approval, but by the CWG, and that the intention was to prepare that done in terms of a deliverable would be done enough for discussion and further work, and not that these things were essentially going to be up or down voted into the proposal. I think the idea was to get some of these may be non-controversial and require little discussion, but others I think will need to be further worked. I don't think it's appropriate for the work of 5 or 7 people to end up, you know, in the document without appropriate level of work being done by the full committee. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. My view is that it's probably in sort of semantics. I agree with you. I think it's a question of how you deem approval. It shouldn't be just up down, and it may be that the group is produces, the task force produces sufficiently polished work that it is merely a matter of approval. But I take your point. It, you know, to the extent, this should be iteratively referred back to the group for either, in some instances, approval, but in others, discussion and refinement and referral back to the group for further development. So that wording...
If I could just respond, Jonathan, one of the things that has been discussed is that it's important for these groups to know what done is and that done may not be fully polished and that that would take longer to get to done if that's what's expected. And I think that, again, some of these things may be totally non-controversial and require a little extra work, but other things may change substantively as the work is done by the group, and trying to over-polish things so that they're final will delay getting the feedback of the group as a whole. So I'd rather see shorter work times and rougher documents than longer work times and more polished documents. Obviously, they have to be, they can't be kind of not ready for prime time, but I think, I hope I'm communicating the balance that needs to be between a working document and opportunity for the group to actually work on these, in addition to the task force presenting it to the group. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Greg. Any other comments or questions before move on? Okay, there's some question about discomfort with limiting the number of persons in a task force and who and determining who is in or not. I understand that. That's also a challenge, and maybe it's we'll have to break from and accept that there isn't a formal limit. And again, these could represent guidelines, so that, you know, you might say, well, there's five people volunteered, and providing they you know, I'm confident in their work, that I'm happy with the five. It's really the important point here is to try and make them manageable small groups that can execute defined tasks. Bring those back to the committee of the whole and not suck up all of the resources into one group such that members and participants can contribute. I'm perfectly open to design team, and in many ways design team perhaps captures the essence of what Greg was talking about. So for me, that's a no-brainer. I'm perfectly happy to take the suggestion design team that YARP suggests in the chat. Providing there's no opposition, let's change the name to design teams. It captures that point well. That okay, I see some other check marks and some positive comments on that. So, Bernie, let's visit briefly then the very rough draft format for the form for input. For defining a task force. And again, this is meant to be, the objective here is to, so that there's a clear and documented scope of a task force. And so I hope we won't take long on this. It probably needs a little more work, but it gives you a flavor of the thinking here. And YARP and others who've got experience of this kind of thing, there may be something you can offer here as to a scope-defining document.
Thank you, Jonathan. Fairly straightforward, and I don't think this will take too long. Description of the issue. Again, it's trying to keep this to things that are very specific. So two paragraphs, no long chapters here. Why is this required for the CWG transition proposal? We're focusing on elements that we can get into the proposal. Description of the work product to deliver, the time frame for delivery, the lead participant, and other proposed participants. So nice and type, as it says up on top. Of course, this could stretch depending on the particular work item we're discussing, but the idea is that it would be, it would hold on 2 pages maximum. Jonathan, back to you.
Thanks, Bernie. So I think that's that we can take a little input on this line, and if there are any precedents that others have got and Avery makes the point about IETF design teams, and her understanding is it's a recommendation to be considered by the whole work group and not necessarily a priority. That's a tricky one. It's certainly not intended to overrule that of the work group, but intended to make significant progress in discrete intervals, and one hopes that the work is of sufficient quality that it's not a question of who overrules whom, but actually that it's sufficiently clear that the work is done such that the CWG, the committee of the whole, is able to accept it based on its merits. Or at least accept the incremental development that's been done. Okay, my lot of people's concern about not spending too much time on process and wanting to go to substance, I think we should move ourselves on to a document that Bernie drafted to try and attempt to capture the initial landscape of task forces, because clearly one of the objectives is to get some task force up and running. So that's the document that we can look at in item 5. And we'd very much like to. I think we set, thank you, that's now up in the screen. So here are a set of named and partly described prospective task forces without numbers that are shared with you under item 5 on the agenda. One of the interesting points that came up immediately under item 1 is that item 1 describes some of the key functions, and this may need to be broken down further. And in describing the functions performed, it seeks to include the SLAs for those functions. And I wonder if that's, I suspect that that may not be the view of those that initially volunteered themselves to potentially work on a task force on SLAs. So really, this highlights a few different tasks. There's one on key functions description and requirement. There's processing DNS SEC requests. There's the .INT and ARPA zone management. This is really a subject for the group to start to pick out where relevant task forces may undertake their work and try and narrow these down as tightly as possible. In my view of this, we would have a spine, what I think of as a spine for the group, or some kind of backbone for the group that is the work in progress of the draft document, such that any given task force, when commissioned, can be linked to a section or subsection or subsection in the proposal, so you know exactly where your work is contributing to the draft proposal. So that's a bit, for me, that's missing in the current structure. There isn't a link to the overarching document that would root any of the work in the proposal. Any comments or input? You should be able to scroll this yourselves on the specificity of tasks as they are currently defined, or any particular, let's start to refer to them as design teams that you think should be commissioned that aren't there already. And I note that Paul Kane talks about merging 1 and 2, since the DNSSEC record is a key function. My concern is keeping these tight and small, and my concern with number 1, as it were, at least the first in the sequence, is it may be too broad already for the purposes of a design team, but I'm open to hearing what others think about that. Greg, your hand is up.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. Greg Chatton for the record. I guess with regard to the first three that all have the same or see previous for what is needed for the proposal, it seems to me that some of this may already be in sections 1 and 2 to the extent that they're currently being done and either would need no change or some change, perhaps, you know, move toward automation. It seems to me that this is kind of a muddle between bringing back an SLA, or should the SLA be in a separate group? I see that's kind of question mark. But if we're going back to descriptions of functions, it seems to me that, you know, maybe that's already to some extent been done. Maybe that just needs to be brought forward from sections from, you know, the two, actually it's two, I guess the 2A, 2B section of the proposal that, you know, was already done. And in some of these dots, I'm not really quite sure I understand fully, you know, maybe those who are working more operationally will understand exactly what this means. I'd be curious about that. And, you know, with regard to .int, I thought we were going to basically say, you know, leave it alone, let it be done as it is. And perhaps same thing with .arpa. But in any case, I have comments on the other two, but I'll cede the mic for the moment. Thanks.
I see comments saying from others relating to the ARPA and INT, noting that ARPA is under IAB, which means potentially we can simply take ARPA off the list. It's not a requirement, but I think in some senses this is a straw man prepared by Bernie with some ideas, but really we'd like the group to contribute and define what the task forces are, to say, or in them in the overarching document. So this is the thread that we'd like to pick up as soon as possible, start to work on, including filling in the definitions. Any other comments or... So, Paul, you say the SLA should cover all transactional service expectations. In other words, that's a complete document now. Can someone remind me, have we had any, thank you, Suzanne, for referencing the IETF SLAs for IANA. So that's a good background for anyone wanting to work on SLAs. And in fact, that's a key principle for us going forward, is to try and reference other work that's been done relevant to the other background for the other proposals. So does it make sense that the SLAs are a standalone design team of their own, which is what the sense that I got coming out of Singapore? Martin, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Martin Boyle here. Yes, I must admit, when I look at items 1 and 2 and the list of stuff for them, both of those, sorry, 1, 2 and 3, all of those are pretty big chunks. As there is quite a lot of stuff in existence on SLAs in the existing contract, I wonder whether we could extract all that material and give it a design team of its own, just focusing entirely on working out whether any of those SLAs need to be modified, or whether we start off with the SLAs as are at the moment as the basis for going forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Martin. I think that was my understanding of how we might work coming out of Singapore. I'll leave Paul to pick up the microphone. Paul Kane, go ahead.
Thank you. Can you just confirm you can hear me? Because it's the first time I've spoken.
Yes, Paul, it sounds like you're a little far from the microphone, so we can hear you, but if you could speak perhaps closer to the mic.
Better. Okay, so the key elements of any SLA have to define the task to be done and parameters under which the task should be achieved. And I believe, whilst I see some support for trying to bring SLAs, or more accurate, SLE, it's an expectation. Many parties will not be party to an agreement, so it's a service-level expectation. I think we need to define...
Paul, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we need you to talk either more loudly or closer to the microphone.
Okay. I'll shout. I don't know if that's better. So
that's better, or there may be a volume setting on your microphone.
Okay, then I'll do multiple things. I'll shout and do everything. So the point is, the SLE, service level expectation, because many parties will not wish to have an agreement with the IANA operator, the service level expectation needs to describe the operation in hand and also the time period in which that operation should be undertaken and obviously potentially penal failing to fulfill that. So I'm afraid to say I form the view that the SLE, service level expectation, should not be separated from the key functions because we need to describe them as part of doing the IANA task.
Thanks, Paul. Although that description could be by reference to where it is described elsewhere in the document, but point taken. Greg, you're next in the queue.
Thank you, Jonathan. Greg Chatton for the record. I turned quickly to the most recent 2014 ICANN IETF MOU supplemental agreement. And you know, one of the problems with using terms that everyone thinks they know what they mean is that they may not mean the same thing by them. An SLA, in its narrow definition, is an agreement on service level. But I think we need to distinguish whether we're talking, and I think you know Paul has already said on this course, we're talking solely about the service level section of an agreement, or really about an agreement. And just without you know going chapter and verse on the latest document, the supplemental agreement I'm looking at, the sections are services, then service levels, then escalation, then documentation, then reports. And collaboration, and then an action summary table. So if you call that an SLA, then there's a lot more than SL than service level dealt with in that document, and that's really the kind of documentation we're going to need. And if you look back at the IANA functions contract, once you strip out all of the government contractees and other stuff, the kind of the operational parts of the the contract and the RFP response that you know contains the kind of technical side of what the IANA function says it will do really boils down to you know, roughly the same kinds of sections. We're going to need to deal with all those sections. So I think we need to decide whether we're going to have a subgroup for SLA and another group for escalation and another group for reports and another group for documentation, or whether we're going to have one group for all of those subjects and maybe other subjects that would fall into the documentation that is going to kind of indicate how the ship is going to run after the IANA contract evaporates. But we need to decide that.
Thanks, Greg. Certainly my expectation was if we could break it into smaller parts, even if they were connected parts or to be connected parts, we should, in order to keep the work flowing and in small incremental pieces. Alan?
Thank you. I think we better also have to be careful that we're not presuming that a word or an acronym, in this case SLA, is monolithic. We may or may not want to take that first task and break it up into multiple ones. But when, for instance, when you look at SLAs in the third one under .int, the normal SLAs that we're talking about here are SLAs dealing with registries, GTLDs or CCTLDs. On the other hand, the SLA we're talking about in the third one is IANA actually acting as a registry, and it's probably a completely different level, different set of SLAs than we're talking about in the prime one. So, yes, we probably want to keep all the SLAs related to registry servicing in one place, and it may be with the rest of task one or separate, but there are other SLAs that we're talking about that are a completely different function, and it makes no sense to group all of those together. So, again, don't presume just because it's the same acronym, it means the same thing in each place.
Thanks, Alan. Hence the need for tight definition in each point. Greg?
Yeah, kind of following on that, I think that if we're going to use the term SLAs to mean something more than the service level section of a larger agreement, if we're going to use the term to mean the larger agreement or documentation, we should either decide we're using SLAs in that kind of technically incorrect manner, or call it documentation, and then have just the service level section be referred to as the SLA section. I know people refer to SLAs often when what they mean is something that has a lot more sections than just service level, but again, that goes back to the need for tighter definition of what is being done by a group and what done means when the group is done. Thanks.
So, to my mind, this is where the real value will come from having the skeleton or backbone that I talked about of the overarching structure of the proposal document, because it will become very clear which portion or portions of the document that any given task force is trying to, or design team is trying to fill in for. And to the extent that that section doesn't exist, it then has to be completed. So, in effect, the draft form of the proposal document creates a form of roadmap for the work to be done or a template to be filled in. John, I note your point to objecting to blocks 4 and 5, where separation as a task force, and this relates to your point you made on list, where you feel that IANA is in effect inseparable. I guess in this instance, it presumes, and to some extent that presumes an outcome of legal advice to support that separation is possible, and therefore, under what circumstances might what sequence of events would take place to get to that point? It assumes that a mechanic for separation will be available, and that mechanic is not yet determined. That's in parallel piece of work, if you like. Greg, is that a new hand?
Yes, a new hand. Greg Shatton, for the record. I have kind of my own issues with 4 and 5. Separation is really the end of a road of escalation, and I think that talking about conditions for approval of separation isn't really kind of the right thing, because we really have to deal with all the levels of escalation before basically the nuclear option is reached, and I think that can't be separate from escalation points. And the trigger for escalation ultimately would, in most cases, also be the trigger for separation if all of the escalations were unsuccessful. And I think we also need to discuss whether there are other nuclear or quasi-nuclear options besides separation, and kind of assuming separation is our endpoint per se, may be assuming too much, or at least the concept of separability. While I don't go as far as John is going, and tend to disagree, certainly. Could be separated, just that it has to be documented appropriately. That we need to kind of not just kind of leap on the idea that
we're just going to have a condition whereby you can say, okay, we're separating. It really is the end of the war at that point. Thanks.
So thanks, Greg. I'd like to make two points, one question and one point. The first would be, I would suggest we start with a clean slate for proposed task forces. This is Bernie's contribution to attempt to set the ball rolling. I haven't given this the detailed view over that it looks like, and in any event, it would be good to get these coming from the group, and as I said a couple of occasions now, linked to the to-be-shared draft proposal that will be worked on the skeleton. However, it may be worth, Bernie, you providing a couple of comments on those two points relating to approval for separation and launching separation. You know, they relate to issues you've picked up in the past, and I'm not sure if you'd like to indicate, maybe that you'd like to indicate what was what's driving those two as suggested or potential task forces.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, sir. On the first one is just I don't disagree with Greg at all that, you know, it's not a question that there is not escalation. My point in that one is we keep talking about getting what gets us to that point, and that's a little bit what I was trying to address, at least to clarify for the group, is yes, the all the escalations that are available have failed. What context in general, regardless of the model, would take us to the point where someone wants, not someone, but the group overseeing this thinks that it has to recommend separation. So just getting our thinking along that line, because it may be a nuclear option, yes, but I don't see how in the proposal we're simply going to say, well, we exhausted all escalations and for this given point, and therefore we're just launching separation. It seems to me we need to have put some thinking on it, or at least provide some words explaining how we're going to reach that point. So that's the first one. The second one is based on the notion of approvals required for launching separation. So in my mind, what we've been talking about is pretty much in all models, there's an MRT-type group that oversees this that would be responsible for making the decision that, yes, it would like to launch separation because this and that condition has been met. I think what we've heard in our various discussions from the registries, that is the CCs and the Gs, that they probably wouldn't accept the proposal that didn't require their formal approval for separation. And so if there is that, and that's a key element of these things, if there is approval required, whose approval is it required, how is it obtained, and how is it part of this package that we would document? Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Bernie. And I note John Poole's point in the chat where he says what you're trying to define is material breach. And John, my understanding of where Bernie was going with this was you've had the material breach, then what do you do? It's what other conditions or practical points need to be met? I also note that there's some points, a supported point in the chat from the experience of discussion in the CCNSO. We need to be very cautious about the use of the term separability and separation. And I just remind everyone that one of the key things, whilst these are absolutely fundamental to many people's view of the work of this group, the ability to ultimately separate through non-significant performance issues, the IANA function from ICANN, is not the sole subject of this proposal, and we need to be very careful to keep focusing the group on the substance of the proposal being the effective ongoing operation and supervision of the IANA function post-transition. So I'll just remind us all that that's got to be our focus, in addition to recognizing any worst-case scenarios that might prevail. Alan, I'm going to respond to your hand, and then I'm going to try and move us on because we're coming up to just less than 15 minutes to go, and we need to sort of work through briefly the other items on the agenda. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I wonder to what extent items 3 and 4 really are accountability issues and not within our domain, or at least something that the accountability group should be working on first. That was the end of my intervention.
Thanks, Alan. I mean, and that's clearly an element of the point is how much, and again, I saw some support for my comments there in and around our focus. So I would encourage everyone, I think what I'd suggest we do is wipe the slate clean of these proposed set of task forces and encourage anyone immediately of this with what we've learned and discussed on the call to propose to work on proposals for some on the list for some tightly specified design teams, as we propose to now call them, and start to put us in a position to get to work on these immediately. So I guess that's an action coming out of the team to make a call for, to reinvigorate the call for specific design teams and start to build those out with leads, volunteer participants, and scoping according to the current definitions. Right, let's move on to the other elements of the agenda here. There, I think it's worth, so under item 6, well, we accidentally got on to scheduling of meetings earlier and dealt with that item. So to that extent, we have dealt with that. You'll see at the bottom of the agenda in the top right-hand corner of your screen, which you may need to scroll back up to, are the key target dates. And I'm not sure we need to look now at a bar chart. We can share the bar chart or the project work that Barry has been working on. If it's readily available, we can put it up. But in essence, the critical points that are highlighted in the current best case scenario that we are seeking to work to is covered in the key target dates and the project plan there. So any comments or questions about those key target dates, the project management side of things, and the sort of future deliverables? There are clearly some issues in here, as we've discussed before, things like the 21-day public comment period, the risks. This, of course, still reflects the previous way of working with RFP 3, 4, and 5, and so that will need to be rejigged as we settle down to this design team way of working. Just make a comment about the face-to-face. This is challenging. Picking a date that fits in with this project schedule, that doesn't clash with other groups. And in particular, in our case, there was another factor as well, which is the proposed face-to-face meeting of the CCWG on accountability. And they are currently proposing to meet a couple of days before our proposed date. This serves a number of purposes. It permits potentially those traveling to participate in both meetings, although nominally, at least at this point, the funding would be for members to travel and participate and be accommodated in a hotel according to the mechanics of how we did this previously. I'm not quite sure how we work up the potential synergy benefits from having the two adjacent to one another from that point of view, it is clear that if the CCWG has met immediately prior, we will be best placed to know and understand the extent of their work and how far they've got, and in addition, almost certainly to take advantage of a meeting between the co-chairs in between the meetings to best coordinate the work and ensure that that goes on. And then I note Mark Covell's point in the chat saying, linking the sort of larger context of other work that's going on with this plus 10 in autumn and UN General Assembly and so on, and recognizing that the criticality of this work and the optics of this work and the ability to perform and there's some support recognizing Mark's comments from both Matthew and Shears and Martin Boyle as to, you know, an awareness . Alan, your hand has come up.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. Just one comment. There's an issue of people who are members of one group and participants in the other. There's a synergy, as you mentioned, for having the two meetings adjacent with presumably a day in between the two. There's an anti-synergy if you are only funding members, in that for many people, traveling to the one for which they're provided travel would prohibit them from participating as a participant remotely in the other one for at least one of the days, because travel may well be more than a single day getting to or from whatever the site is. So not providing travel, not providing hotel and lodging for the 2 days where they're a participant may stop them from participating at all. And that's, I think, a very significant issue.
Yeah, thanks, Alan, for that point and acknowledging that you made that to me privately off list as well as a point. So I think it is something we need to think about whether and how we can deal with that. I suppose the presumption, and I'd welcome any comments to the contrary, is that there is let me not say anything. I agree. There is a challenge there for those that are not if we are not funding members of the first who are participants in the second, to some extent we prejudice or potentially prejudice their participation in the second meeting, depending on how far they need to travel. Bear in mind, as it's currently scheduled, the one is a Monday-Tuesday, there's a Wednesday in between, and then the other is a Thursday-Friday. So in principle, there is travel time in between.
Depending on how far you're coming and when planes fly.
Agreed. I'm going to move us on then. I don't think there's anything significant under item 7 to report, other than that we do, Lisa and I will meet with Matthew, Thomas and Leon, the co-chairs of CCWG, on Friday. We continue to plan to work as closely as possible with them. And we've talked about the timing, relative timing of the face-to-face meetings. Avery, let me give you an opportunity. I don't want to put you on the spot here, but if there is anything you'd like to make a point on in your capacity as liaison between the groups, feel free to do so at this point. But I know I haven't prepped you for this, so we'll understand if there is nothing for whatever reason that you'd like to say at this point.
Yeah. I mean, this is Avery speaking. At this point, you know, You all as chairs have been meeting so frequently that there's been little for me to add. I keep watching. When I see you guys not covering it, I'll jump up and down and say there's something additional. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. I'm sure you'll keep us honest. That's good to know. And we'll do our best to coordinate and work effectively together, but it's useful to have someone keeping an eye on that. So let's review then the action items under item 8. and make sure that we've covered everything. As it stands, we have, a set of points coming out of the minutes relating to things like the design teams, but specifically, I think, Grace, on the action burning to review documents, well, it's review documents and it's a sort of comprehensive review of the documents based on the inputs received in this meeting and to use the new terminology. That's the one action. Certainly we'd like to hear proposals for both a name, a lead, and content of specified design teams. In addition, we'd like to have, as soon as possible, a skeleton or backbone proposal document that we can start to work with, that we can coordinate the work of the design teams to. And so that's something which we'll be asking Bernie to produce, and in fact, we have discussed offline already. Are there any other key actions arising that haven't been captured so far? Ms. Berry's work on the table, I notice. I'm just scanning over. I won't read them all out. Lisa?
Thank you, Jonathan. It's not been mentioned it's been mentioned in the chat, and I saw that Elise were mentioning the principles that we should work on, and I think we should put it as an action item. So we could put in that Martin Boyle and I are to finish the principles in the next coming 2 weeks, so that we have those done and not to deal with those anymore. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. For the record, that was an early piece of work that appears to have been left slightly open. It's substantively worked on, but there's obviously some, I'm not sure it's fully signed off or complete. So that's useful to acknowledge that. Yeah. And note there's some relevant points in the chat, or a point on simplicity. Let's see if that finds its way into the principles. Good. I hope that feels like a satisfactory meeting. I'm conscious I've talked. I really would like to have the balance of voice coming from the members and participants, so please do take that as encouragement. I realize there was some material to be got through. Thank you, Olivier, for your support for the content and style of the meeting. Any other final questions or comments under AOB? Sean asks about the venue of the face-to-face. Sean, just to clarify the way this works, first important thing to do is to nail down a date. Second thing that happens is that that's then referred to the ICANN meetings team, who take some very practical points into consideration, such as availability and cost. But in our case, they also take something else into consideration, and presumably they do in other cases as well, but I'm aware that in this case they are, and that's other practical points, such as the national makeup of the group, and therefore the likely requirement for visas and some sort of overarching budget, which includes travel. So there's a few practical considerations, and a couple of venues have been mentioned, but nothing has been set at this point. Avery, that's a really good point, and I recognize that you put that point on the integrated proposal. We've hit the top of the hour. Why don't you make a couple of remarks now on that integrated proposal? To be honest with you, your earlier question of how do we deal with that as a kind of overarching point, I haven't quite got my head around yet, but feel free to take the microphone now and make a couple of remarks on that.
Okay, thanks. And this is quick remarks. We've got the big question of we have inside models, we have outside models. We're trying to bridge that discussion and find a way to tackle it and find a consensus point. while applying the model. The document is open for comments. You know, we keep working on it. I'll have another document out in the next couple of days on how the model meets some of the accountability requirements for IANA, so we could take the discussion further. We're continuing to work on it, and, you know, wouldn't mind seeing other people join us in this informal, ad hoc, formed from the ground up invitation drafting team. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery, and point noted. So if we could pick that up on list and think of two things, really. It's contributions to the structure and architecture of the model, and two, how we handle that within the new working methods, given the objective of trying to push forward some of the practical substance of the proposal whilst recognizing that how we might integrate and deal with this and other models. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for what feels like a good meeting. We've no doubt got tons of work to do, so I am not sure what our end number of meetings will be, but thank you for your contributions to Meeting 22.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.